Hello to the Gestalten podcast presented by Concept House Design, your number one headhunting and consultancy services when it comes to finding the best talent within car and transportation / mobility design. And my name is Martin Groschwald. And in this week's episode, I am very happy to welcome Sonny Lim, head of design for the motorsport department specializing on footwear at Puma. And Sonny and I have talked a little bit about his background, which comes from a car industry, moved into fashion. So there was always an affinity for mobility design and getting from A to B with him, but also how his current kind of position at Puma overlaps with mobility design. He tells us a bit more about his past experience and where product design helps potentially the car industry in the future. So enjoy the show, enjoy the conversation with Sonny, and here we go. So for today's episode of the Gestalten podcast, I have a very special guest, somebody that I was always interested to get onto the podcast because it's not necessarily about cars. It's not only about product design. It's about pretty much how design is connected to all different kind of things. And so I thought, you know, who would be a very interesting kind of background for that? And so I was thinking about a lovely guy working for, you know, a little company based here in Germany called Puma, who happens to be one of the biggest, fashion and shoe manufacturers in the world. And please, all of you listeners, welcome with me together the head of design for the motorsports division at Puma, Sonny Lim. Sonny, hello and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I'm very happy to be here.
Lovely. Yeah, I do very much appreciate you taking the time and sharing some of the stories with you. But before we start going into a little bit more detail, how about you introduce yourself to the audience, to the listeners, with a very, very short background of what you have done in the past and what you're currently doing at Puma?
So actually, what I did in the past, I studied industrial design in Delft, in the Netherlands. And that's probably the most surprising thing about me. That my heritage is Dutch. So I'm from the Netherlands. I grew up there. I was born there, and I also studied there. And of course, that's also pretty interesting because it's Netherlands, as you know, is a very amazing country for designers and architects. It's a very big design community, very talented as well. My parents originally came from Singapore and Malaysia, and that's kind of my kind of cultural heritage. So after I graduated from TU Delft in 2001, I started basically working for Adidas in Germany as well, designing football boots. And then after a while, after around 6 years in the shoe business, I basically got a chance to move to Singapore and become senior designer for BMW Design Works. So I really worked there with a lot of pleasure for around 3 years. And then I moved to a Dutch company called Philips, also in Singapore. And my last company before I moved back to Germany was at Dell, and basically designing computer peripherals. So computer keyboards, mice, all these kind of things that you need around the ecosystem of computing. So now I'm at Puma. As you said, I'm head of design, leading a team of talented designers in the motorsport business.
Very cool. So you've come through a lot of things there, just to kind of break this down a little bit. And then that was one of the reasons I find this so interesting. So you've done shoes and fashion. You've done very traditional kind of product design when it comes to Dell and Philips, and you've also worked within an automotive background. So let me ask you this: how does this career that you've had affect your every single day decision making or the way you approach design? Because they are all so fundamentally different.
It affects in a sense that I look at decisions and also design decisions much more in a holistic way. And also I can delve into the experiences I had in the past, looking at all these kind of different ways of finding solutions. So in a sense, it affects not only in decision making, but also definitely in terms of the creative process, right? Looking at how different people in the different industries do things, and having actually experience working with them and actually hands-on also designing in different fields, it really allows you to be much more flexible and also picking up new challenges a lot quicker in that sense.
Yeah, it's something that I personally find extremely interesting because, you know, when we had a little bit of the pre-chat before we started the recording the podcast, we talked about, you know, mobility, where mobility is going. And I said what I found interesting, and that's why I wanted to really get you on the show as well. It's not just about, oh, you know, you're working for Puma and you have all this kind of experience. But I think there's so much more nowadays when we talk about mobility and the future and getting from A to B. It's not just about planes. It's not just about cars. It's not just about scooters. But if we actually take this back to the big fundamental of getting from A to B, it's about walking. Yeah. So we're talking about shoes. We're talking about fashion, about this as well. So with all this background that you've had in your career, now, when we talk about the future of mobility, are you guys at Puma, you know, looking into what, let's, for example, the car design industry is doing, where this idea of, you know, automation goes towards to autonomous driving in that sense, when we talk about electrification, how does this affect the thinking process of a company such as Puma, of course, and, you know, as much detail as you're allowed to talk about? And where do you think that maybe even a company such as Puma or like the fashion industry as a whole can even be positively influencing what these kind of car manufacturers are doing in this current world?
I'm not so sure if we can influence what the car industry is doing, but definitely it's Puma as a company definitely plays a role in terms of what we call urban mobility. It's basically the kind of the stage when you either transition from a car to a bicycle, or, you know, from a train to a bus, or these kind of stages where you go out on the street and walk or take a bicycle or anywhere where you are kind of exposed to the external conditions, the weather conditions and all these kind of things. So these kind of things, definitely that's something we look at, especially in motorsport, because in motorsport, traditionally, it was all about, you know, these traditional pro driving shoes, right? The fireproof Nomex shoes that our Formula One drivers are wearing. And also the DTM teams for example, BMW and other things. However, we also work with partners like Porsche Design. And again, this whole scala of partnerships and collaborations that allows us also to kind of put in a different kind of perspective for urban mobility. Like I said, the kind of transition between the different modes of mobility, right? That's a very big topic for us. What kind of shoes do you need? What kind of headwear? What kind of accessories? What kind of apparel, clothes do you need for all these kind of things? And what we try to do is, of course, work internally very closely together with accessories and apparel and the shoes together. So you kind of create a whole outfit, a whole look for that kind of mobility needs.
How would you for that kind of sense, like, describe the big changes at the moment, or like, you know, what is the big difference? Because if you look onto the streets, and I think, you know, fashion and like shoe is, shoe fashion has become almost like a commodity, but at the same time is, a fashion statement. You can call it fashion victims and all these kind of things. You know, the sneaker game is very strong with a lot of people, especially with the young kids. So how do you combine the fashion aspects of the pure aesthetics in terms of what you want to do with the functionality behind it? Because I can imagine there's a certain kind of gap of maybe what you can do, because it needs to be extra light, or it needs to be very durable. And let's say it needs to be water resistant from maybe the stuff that you can do that is becoming high fashion, or, you know, collaborations with luxury fashion brands or something like that. I mean, this sounds very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with sneakers is it's really on the intersection between kind of the functional elements that you need, the functional needs, but also the kind of the fashion aspect of it. And that fashion aspect is in, especially in motorsport, is much more related to car culture. The whole reason why people buy, let's say, a Porsche shoe or a Ferrari shoe, it has to do with being wanting to align themselves or kind of buy into the car brands themselves. So it has to do with car culture. And actually, when you look at car culture, it has been undergoing a major shift. You hear, statistics where young people don't ambition owning a car anymore. And also, if you think about it, the way kids nowadays connect the first touch point that they have with car culture is probably through video games, things like Gran Turismo, Need for Speed, all these kind of video games. That's probably their first experience in terms of almost like driving a car. So their whole way of looking at cars and car culture, it has changed fundamentally from where we were 20, 30 years ago to now. And of course, that also impacts the way we design our products, the way we market our products. That's something we look at it very closely in the sense of how do the kids nowadays perceive things like Formula One and car racing and all these kind of aspects that relate to motorsport.
Interesting. I'm a very big fan of both driving a real car as well as driving a virtual car, I have to say. And you mentioned just Gran Turismo. Obviously, Gran Turismo has this World Series nowadays where the drivers or like the virtual drivers sit together in this one place and you can see them being sponsored. Like, they're having proper gloves, they're having proper shoes. Yeah. Are you designing shoes specifically for the virtual racing world as well? Or are you trying to make a connection between this virtual world and the real world? So let's say, these kind of Gran Turismo drivers are using technically the same equipment as the Ferrari drivers in Formula One are using, or what is the idea behind that? Because, it seems if I would ask my parents, for example, they would be just like, yeah, I understand why you drive this, but why would you make this, like such a big event out of it if you can drive a real car?
Yeah, I mean, we do have special gear for gamers nowadays. So Puma just launched last year, kind of a gaming, a very minimalistic gaming shoe, which is has a very thin outsole. The upper is very lightweight and breathable. And that basically came out of the insight that pro gamers, when they game, actually the PC gamers, they often tend to take off their sneakers. And that's kind of a thing that we see as well. That is happening in the pro gaming racing scene as well. That people don't require their traditional shoes and traditional footwear anymore and traditional gear as well. Obviously, the needs are very different. Things like fireproof doesn't have a lot of relevance in the gaming scene. And of course, we also look at that. And a good thing is that, things like the very minimal gaming shoe that we have is also suitable for driving a racing simulator. And that's something, again, that's definitely on our radar. And that's something also that we're going to proceed in the next few years of how to kind of cater for that scene even better than we currently do already.
So does this officially count as part of the motorsport team, or is that part of a different kind of design team that you run internally? Because I can see that if you include something like that, I mean, motorsports or let's say the idea of a racing or sports in general can change quite a lot. I mean, we saw this a few years ago where football boots without the cleats pretty much became an every single day accessory. So people were just wearing football boots day to day. Do you think that, these kind of boots could also become in this kind of generation? So with these kind of people wearing them every single day and outside on the streets as well?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the whole way with sneakers. In this project, we really work closely with our innovation colleagues. They are usually the at the spearhead of these kind of new ventures. And then after a while, basically the business units take over and run with innovations and run with the kind of development that happened before. But you're absolutely right that, what used to be designed as high performance shoes tend to really have a relevance on the street as well. We've seen that many, many times. Of course, the very famous examples of basketball shoes that, you know, that became streetwear. Even motorsport had happened. You might remember one of our professional racing shoes from 15, 20 years ago called the Speedcat. That became a huge hit, because it was actually one of the first sneakers that you could wear going out and actually enter a club with. And that's all these kind of stories of, you know, how high performance gear became cool to wear on the street. That's the sneaker world is kind of littered with examples of those.
Yeah, I want to go into this high performance bit a little bit later on, but I have one question and something very interesting that you have said, which is the innovation team that you've just mentioned. So how can the normal person listening to this imagine that? Is it that they are pretty much like your research team that, you know, works for Puma, and they look at almost everything that happens in everyday culture, from, you know, sports to what happens in businesses, what happens in youth culture, what happens in, let's say these 20-ish year old cultures, and then they come up with new ideas, they come up with new materials? Or is it something that is very fruitful from both sides, so that you say, hey, we've seen this, and like, you know, can we not just do something like that? How can you imagine this? Imagine this if you're not inside, because this sounds so interesting, and it's almost like, in the car industry, you would say you might have an advanced team and you have a production team, but it doesn't sound that simple to compare.
Actually, it's very similar to that. Basically, what innovation team does, as any advanced design team, they look further ahead. So they do the long-term developments and research needed for getting a competitive advantage in a few years' time. However, the in-house design teams are much more closer to the product, in the sense that, we design the products that come out in market in around 18 months time. And we do that every half year. Basically, we have a spring summer season and an autumn winter season following kind of the fashion season. So every half a year, we kind of design a new collection, design new products. And that's of course something that cycle. Is something that innovation team is less tied to. They can do innovations that require long-term investments, a lot more research and developments, talking to all the suppliers and also looking at the needs of the consumers. And so in that sense, it works. I think it works quite similar to what advanced teams are doing in car design.
Mm. Just in a very, quick amount of time, I would say.
Exactly. The life cycles, of course, and are much shorter in shoe design. And it's called the fast-moving consumer goods industry, not for nothing, right?
Yeah. And how is that for you personally? Would you say, compared to the stuff that you've done in the past, you find this very enjoyable? Do you say sometimes you would wish to have a bit more time to develop something? Because especially maybe, in terms of the high performance side that you were in with motorsports, it sounds to me, from what I know, maybe a little bit more like a football schedule. So you do something 2 years in advance or a year in advance rather than just a few months in advance. But without saying anything like, it's just negative or it's just positive, but how is the personal feeling for you? Would you sometimes wish you had more time to develop something and it's just go with the flow? Or would you say like this, these kind of 6 months periods is also what keep the people fresh in return?
Yeah, I mean, it has both positive and negative sides. I mean, the most positive side obviously is that you get to do a lot of iterations, a lot of tries and design things. So being on such a short schedule allows you to kind of also as a designer develop very quickly and learn a lot of new things in a very short amount of time. And that's very positive, especially if you're a young designer just starting out of university. I think that's a very valuable thing, because you can have a product out on the market in 1.5 years already. In the future, and that's of course a very valuable experience. So you get to go through that entire development cycle in a very short amount of time. Of course, it would always be nice to do more research and, you know, spend longer on the, on a particular project. But there's also value in in doing many different projects in a short amount of time and really learning on the job itself.
How are you, if we go into a little bit more detail on the learning of the job and how to do things, how much is the designer actually involved in the creation of the product? Are you, let's say, just delivering an aesthetic kind of direction? Because obviously I can imagine that the materials are one of the most challenging, but also most rewarding directions that you can go into, because there's so many developments at the moment. I've recently seen a dress which was made out of parametric, so it looked like a parametric model pretty much, and it kind of fitted all different kind of shapes, in that case it was of women, of course, which was very interesting to see that. When you see that, so the role is not just about developing a product, but also making sure that the materials are working. It sounds to me that you also have to have an understanding of the budgeting behind it and the manufacturing process behind it. Is this the normal job of a fashion designer, or would you have to say, if you go into these kind of direction, maybe compared to the car industry, you need to be much more hands-on and much more knowledgeable about the product itself, so that the actual creative process is maybe just a smaller part and maybe smaller than what people think?
Absolutely. Definitely the last one. I mean, it's as a designer, I wouldn't qualify ourselves, especially the footwear designers, as fashion designers. Most of the people here have a background in product design or in transportation design even. Doing shoes, like I said, it's a cross section that you need to do. It's an intersection between fashion and functional wear. So the designers are really involved into the creative, into the creation of the product. Really designing not only the style of the shoe, but also creating the tech packs necessary. So basically the technical drawings with which the 3D modeler is going to make the tooling, make the outsole and the midsoles and things like that. Also, what's then very important is of course material choice. Material choice is not only related to functional needs and performance needs, of course, but also the way our product looks like. For that, we have many suppliers that we work with. Most of the times, we kind of pick a material from catalogs, but sometimes, if it's really necessary, then we also develop new materials ourselves. And again, we work with suppliers on that one. So it all depends. If we need a very specific material, for example, a very lightweight leather or very strong leather or things like that, then we will work with our leather suppliers to create the material in a sense.
Yeah. So taking that a little bit further, and you've mentioned obviously high performance just a few minutes ago. You are working in a very special kind of environment. You mentioned already Formula One. You mentioned the DTM when it comes to race driving. These materials need to be fireproof. They need to be able to protect the race driver and the user of these, shoes, overalls, whatever they are wearing. How does this affect, Puma as a whole? I mean, are you a little bit of a special niche within the company? Are you, bringing new materials into the everyday life of the company because of these high performance requests that might not be able to go into general culture fashion? Because I can just imagine it's almost like, looking back into BMW and have the i3 and the i8 coming out, and you just well, these guys are some completely different just because of the background that they're doing, or motorsports teams that have then developed into everyday cars like McLaren, for example. This just sounds so interesting, but it also must put quite a bit of pressure, obviously, on the everyday designer, just to say we have a responsibility of working with materials in particular that have not just maybe an impact on what our other guys are doing that are more in the normal shoes and the normal fashion industry, but could also have a big influence on other industries, such as maybe the car industry, but also, let's say the the everyday furniture industry?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, because we are working in shorter timelines than, for example, the car industry, right? We also, what we say usually is that we are also closer to what's happening in society. So basically, the trends that are out there, you know, things that that we see are happening already, we can relatively quickly respond to that. You know, one big topic, of course, that that happened in the last 5 years, of course, was sustainability. Fortunately, Puma already had a very kind of large heritage in sustainability. We did quite a lot of things, even including the first biodegradable shoe like 10 years ago. So all these kind of things that we see happening in society, we kind of bring that to the table when we talk to our partners as well. A very good example is, you know, we brought to the table the whole sustainability topic when we were collaborating with the latest range for Porsche design. And of course, it also aligns with their ambitions. Of course, they were at that time when we brought it to the table, they were working on the Taycan already. So all these kind of things then align very nicely, and we can kind of build a collection that's kind of very in line with you know, with the direction of the car companies.
And how does that work? I mean, like, is it just like they come up to you, or you go up to them and just like, hey, I think we have something in common? Or is that coming more naturally? Or is that coming because, you know, you know somebody at Porsche Design? Because that's, from my personal experience, I understand that obviously there are certain kind of collaborations happening, but let's say design departments are not often sharing maybe as much as they should to push for the future.
I totally agree. I mean, what we try to do is with all our partnerships is to have a dialogue. It's to have a true partnership and a true collaboration. So that means really talking to each other and yeah, bringing ideas to the table, you know, at the start of a new collection. Sometimes it's really about building that kind of creative relationship with them. Sometimes it's easier than others because some partners obviously don't have kind of a creative team on the other side. Some partners do, and that tends to be a big help when people have kind of a designer on the other side talking to us on the same level. Because then, you know, from their side, they can push creatively. From our side, we can push creatively. And then it kind of comes together more naturally than, for example, talking to a business guy or talking to a marketing guy on the other side.
Yeah, I can imagine, and I know what you're talking about. what I find interesting about fashion shoes, and I had a conversation just very recently with Lutz Fügener from the University of Pforzheim, who's the chair for the bachelor's program for transportation design. And not in this recording, but like, you know, in conversations we had before, is that, you know, he said that companies such as Puma, you know, other fashion shoe industries are very interested in transportation designers because the general idea of a car and a shoe is not that far away from each other. From a stylistic point of view, and you've mentioned earlier as well that you have, you know, product designers, you have transportation designers. What do you learn from these kind of guys coming every single day into your studio and working with them? But also, what do you think, or where do you see a chance for other industries? And, you know, we can throw out the car industry, but, you know, we can use anything pretty much that comes to your mind where they can maybe understand, you know, hey, maybe those kind of guys with these short-term cycles can also learn something from us in terms of, I don't know, being efficient, for example.
I think, I think for any designer coming from design school, right, what you learn in design school or design university, it's really about the process, you know, the kind of the idea of creating three concepts and not being happy with the first sketch and all these kind of things. The kind of the creative process is in general quite similar in both transportation design and in product design. You make you make a mountain of sketches and you pick a few to continue with that. And So that kind of creative process is very similar in both industries. Also, in terms of the skills that's needed, kind of the visualization skills, the drawing, the, you know, the making of renderings, all these kind of things, being able to judge a particular line, you know, if it's you know, proportions. Again, these kind of skills, that's there's a lot of overlap there. However, where it's kind of really different in terms of for car design and for product design in general, is that in car design, of course, you work on a very different scale. And also you work with different kind of tools in terms of your visual tools are different in the sense that, you know, you rely a lot on sculpting and all these kind of things that that are perhaps less appropriate in when it comes to designing a shoe. Because in a shoe, you have both, you know, kind of the harder elements, kind of the sole and kind of things. These things you can sculpt and use kind of the car design skills there. But also there's a whole part of it that's also needs to be flexible and soft and close to your foot. So that's kind of the area where usually car designers need to make that transition from. You know, traditional car design from kind of the sculpting and nice lines and speed and all these kind of things to kind of a more product design where you think about, okay, what does a shoe actually need to do? Where does it need protection? What kind of lacing system do you need? What kind of materials are you using? And that's sometimes, a lot of transportation designers manage to make the transition, but you have some as well that kind of remains kind of stuck in the car design ways, and that's something you see as well from some designers here in the team. Yeah.
But would you say, and I'm playing a little bit devil's advocate here, because you went to Delft, and Delft is a very high level school when it comes to industrial design, and you know there's a lot of people also in the car industry who come from that background, from that school. Would you say the general training of an industrial designer, car designer, product designer is so fundamentally different that you will, when they start a job, you will still have to train them on what they're supposed to do? Or would you say from a thinking process, maybe the industrial designers or the product designers have an easier way into something such as shoe design, but we have to train them, or like, you know, we have to have an understanding that maybe their sketches are not as, great, or not as flamboyant as maybe the one from a car designer, because I have always this feeling that car design is oftentimes still about the sketch. So it's more about, it's not necessarily about innovation. It's more about, you know, development of something that is already there, where I have the feeling when you look into product design, and in particular shoes, even though the shoe is a certainly limited product, but if the amount of shoes that you have nowadays, there's certainly innovation material there. Do you think that students coming from a product background just get that a little bit better than maybe the car design guys, or is that really just dependent on the people and their mindset on working on these things?
I would say it really depends on people, but you are right that people or students that come from straight from design school often lead on the job training to really get into the particular field of either car design or sneaker design or all these kind of things, or the different industries. I think what's also important, that's why I always find it very important to see what kind of internships a student or a graduate has done in the past, because at those internships you probably learn so much you kind of able to apply all the skills that you learn in school in a more practical way. And I think probably in that sense, I think internships might be even more important than which design school you went to. Because that's, on the job training, I think that's such an invaluable resource to have I definitely wholeheartedly recommend every design student to do at least one internship. And if you can, two or even more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for you personally, I mean, the interns that you have, or the people that you hire, and I'm not just saying like it needs to be graduates, but people with experience, are you personally looking into just something that where they have a vast experience like yourself? Or sometimes, you know, you say maybe we just need a specialist in that, because that is what's changing at the moment. And this comes to the next topic that I want to discuss with you about. But it seems to me that nowadays it's becoming very difficult to just say, oh, this is a shoe designer or this is a car designer, especially when we look into car interiors. But there's much more that is now coming into play that is being requested from designers, not just in terms of their creativity, but also in terms of their knowledge, in terms of their understanding of how, you know, things are now interacting with each other.
Yeah. I think what we are looking for, what I'm looking for in new designers is something what I call a T-shaped designer. You might have heard that that term before. It's it was coined by IDEO and basically means that you are kind of broad in your interests, or you have a broad base in terms of things that you can contribute to a creative team. But on the same hand, you all can also go deep in a few particular skills that you have. So you are really good in something, like, for example, sketching, or the kind of the hard design skills that are necessary for this job as well. And that's kind of the ideal designer. So somebody who can participate in various different projects and different challenges, and is curious enough to learn new things, but also has a deeper understanding for certain skills, and really has a training as well to do those a few things particularly well.
That's interesting, and that's a good kind of direction of something that I'm very personally interested in, but I think that we can share also with the listeners out there. How does this entire idea of digitalization, always on, this always connected kind of lifestyle that we have at the moment, ranging from things such as, Siri, Amazon Alexa, going all the way into planes nowadays and cars and everything like that. How does this affect you, because obviously I can probably imagine on high performance, especially when it comes to Formula One, thinking about, okay, the airflow that is going through the stuff that these guys are wearing, so that they have a body temperature measured, all these kind of things coming in together. How does this affect your department? Do you think this has already an impact, or do you think, Nike, I think, started this 10, 15 years ago, where they had this little chip in a shoe and you can always track where you were running. Obviously now we have these running tools, but do you think that, Puma will be moving towards this kind of greater mobility as well, to track you wherever you can go and partner maybe with companies that way? Or would you say, we're probably more hardware based. We're trying to explore a little bit in that kind of direction, because that's where this digital and this haptic culture is now coming together. And, it's almost a question for everybody involved is to use this kind of data and this kind of information that your users are doing, and just to make better products, or to make even more specialized products for specific people, such as high performance, such as athletes in particular.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you start designing in the sportswear field, you always need to rely on data, in a sense, especially for the performance aspects. And that's usually why our colleagues who, for example, design football boots, they start earlier than we do. So they are able to test their new shoes properly with, put it on players and things like that. I have to say, probably it's not so much digital information as such, but it's really about really getting the impressions of and feedback from the athletes themselves. I think that's was already important, since the beginning of sportswear shoes, and it will remain as important. However, the kind of subjective feedback and subjective data might in the future be replaced with this kind of hard data, numbers and pressure points and temperature and all these kind of things that you can measure, and perhaps you can also use to make a more detailed design, in a sense, and more improvements on a detailed level. That's something that's definitely I see as the future as well for sportswear. Now, collecting information straight from the consumer itself, it all depends. Like I said, it makes sense if you have a high performance running shoe to collect, to have information from the run itself. But for somebody who buys the shoe purely as a lifestyle sneaker, I'm not sure how much information we need there. All right. So, yeah. And also, I'm not sure how much information the consumer would would actually want to give up to a company in that sense as well. I think there's a fine balance between, you know, privacy in a sense, and also what we actually need to design a better product. And often the case is, you know, heard a quotation often that you know, consumers don't know what they want until they see it, right? And that applies to especially to our business as well, to our products. You know, our designers tend to live a few years in the future. They tend to have a bit more progressive view on what would be possible. And that's also, of course, a very important part of our job to be that kind of sensor for the company. You know, what will be relevant in 2-3 years time on the street. And that's that kind of trend sensitivity. That's kind of perhaps the most valuable asset for a designer. So perhaps that's less in terms of numerical data, but definitely and digitalization. But digitalization, of course, plays an important part of trend spotting. You know, what's out there on Instagram, and what people could wear in the future. I mean, all these kind of signals of what might be happening. That happens on a large part digitally nowadays. You know, in the past, you would travel to various different cities and you might get a hint of what's happening now. Now you see a lot of different influences all around the world of things that are happening and things that could be relevant for the wider audience in a few years' time. Through digitalization, it allows designers much easier access to that kind of to those kind of signals.
Fascinating. I've had these big to small, but still, like, you know, absolutely mass market developments that were happening at the moment. Absolutely fascinating, because if you look into China in particular, you have two different kind of directions. You have the absolute highest mass market, so everybody wants to go into that, and then they of course have the, you know, the population to back it up as well, just in terms of the numbers. But they also have this wish, I would say, or this kind of, you know, expectation of being, how to put this in the best possible way, bespoke and luxury. From what I know so far and what I have seen so far is that a lot of the fashion companies, rather than doing their own bespoke direction, they have partnered up with celebrities or, like, you know, highly regarded individuals. Obviously, in the sports business, it's a given that you do a shoe for somebody that has a name, and then, you know, it's being represented as the name rather than just with the brand behind it. But do you see that becoming a much more day-to-day activity, or do you still think that these kind of bespoke businesses and these that kind of bespoke directions will still be based around, you know, celebrities or athletes, just to kind of use their popularity to push it? Or could you even, like, you know, think about, hey, if somebody comes in and pays us enough for a shoe that they want to have just as a one-off, why not? You know, I mean, it's going a little bit into that direction with the individualization, what you can find online and, like, with configurators, and you can go into shops and, you know, put your names on there and, like, you can choose your own colors. But could you even go as far as thinking, like, you know, the idea of a one-off shoe or the one-off, I don't know, t-shirt or something like that could be something that is actually of big interest for an industry like that? Especially in comparison with, let's say, you work with Porsche, and a guy who buys a, you know, a Taycan has the ability to have a one-off shoe, for example, with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, that topic has been around for quite a while, especially also in the fashion industry, right? Mm. Up to what amount do consumers want to have a totally bespoke product? Because in a sense, it sounds on paper, it sounds great. Of course, you have a unique product to fit your unique personality, right? But what we also seeing is that there's also, you know, a sizable community or sizable group of users that are consumers that want to belong to a particular group, to a belong to a particular cultural movement, I think that group is probably more interesting for a company like Puma than rather go for a fully bespoke one. Also, in terms of kind of the brand, we're probably not the right brand for people to, you know, to really want to have a, you know, one-off made product for that. Having said that, we did try in the past. Puma did have a what we call the Mongolian barbecue concept, like 10-15 years ago, where people could actually pick and choose, go to a shop and pick and choose the pieces they want to have on the shoe and different colors and all these kind of things. You put those pieces on a plate, you give the plate to the shop, and after a few weeks you would get a basically totally bespoke shoe sent home. I think it was relatively successful. It was a great concept. But again, I think in terms of what people really want, perhaps, I think a lot of people still do not perhaps want to go through the hassle of actually designing a shoe. It's it can be quite tedious if you think about it. And of course, if you're a celebrity, you get all those kind of things done for you. And you basically just sketch it, say yes or no. I think what we do see is, though, is that kind of the collaboration culture, kind of the influencer hype and all these kind of things is perhaps shifting away from kind of really true celebrities, right? Kind of the very big stars, but also going into much more local influencers, local collaborators. And perhaps people that are not so famous yet, but have a potential of becoming very well known in the future. And I think Puma has a really good track record also in spotting those kind of emerging talents. And that's kind of the future way to go, that we not only, kind of are into it for just kind of building products with influencers, celebrities, but also giving emerging talent a kind of a platform to showcase their work.
Yeah, and I think it's very important as a brand as well to find this way for yourself, because otherwise you're starting a wall that's maybe already out there. I mean, if you look into other competitors, Nike, Adidas, and then you look into companies such as New Balance, Under Armour, and just trying to buy a way in with a lot of money. Especially I see it from the US market that Under Armour is very strong and trying to push for everything that they can over there. It's always a question, like if you want to swim with all the sharks or if you want to be the shark yourself. And oftentimes it's exactly that kind of question, is where am I right? Where is my position as well?
Exactly. And if you have a huge marketing budget and you throw a lot of money against it, I'm sure you can make something happen. But are you then also authentic? Are you then real? And that's kind of thing something we also consider for ourselves, right? How authentic is it to collaborate with somebody, or is it just something you just use as a badge, as something for marketing purposes? But does he or she really have an impact, or really have authenticity that fits with our brand and fits with, for example, a business unit like Motorsport?
Yeah. Do you have an actual impact on that? So could you, if marketing comes up to you and just like, hey, we would like to team up with this person, do you then say like, okay, we come up specifically something for that person, or do you sit down with that person and develop something with them, or how is that process usually?
It depends, but usually the case within Puma is our design teams go with to that person and really co-create with them, a particular range or even a particular product. So that's the ideal case scenarios, but there are various different levels, right? There are also some influencers that just wear our product and just talk about it rather than, where they get, instead of getting a, own collection. So there are various different levels of collaboration that we have with our partners.
And what's your personal favorite one? My last question before we get into the notorious three last questions.
I think the last collaboration that we did that's out there is with Need for Speed. So basically what we did is we created a sneaker that's also in the game, but also is sold physically in out there. The shoe is called the Octane, and I think both in terms of the design of the shoe and the whole marketing behind it, being featured in the game itself and use the game as a platform to kind of talk to our consumers, to our new motorsport consumers in a sense. I thought that was a really great collaboration. It's not so much with the celebrity, but definitely with with something that's relevant to the consumer.
Oh, certainly, and probably one in terms of racing games. Like if you look into the last 20 years, probably the biggest brand. You can talk about Gran Turismo, you can talk about Forza, but Need for Speed has been one of the first ones to be absolutely massive.
Yeah,
in terms of the cultural importance I think, you know, that comes with that. But Sonny, for that, thank you very much. But before I let you go, there are three questions that I ask everybody. One of them is very car specific. So, you know, that we will come to that in a little bit. But there's two questions which are very general. So I'm not asking you about, you know, designers or projects in that kind of sense that have had to do with things that you've worked on. So you can ask completely answer completely freely about this. And my first question to you would be, if you could have participated in any project in the past, you know, like just choose anything that you feel right is the one that you would have liked to join in on.
Tough question. I think in terms of in terms of product design, it would of course be something like something that's very impactful and iconic, like the iPhone. Of course, having been part of such a groundbreaking product, that would have been something that would have been big on my bucket list. In terms of car design, I would have liked to design something that's very impactful as well, not so much in terms of the design, but perhaps in terms of, you know, things like the Volkswagen Golf or the Fiat Panda, you know, all these kind of great designs that are very humble in a sense, but also have a huge impact on a lot of people's lives.
Cool. Question number two. Who is the most influential designer to your, you know, to the way you work at the moment? And this is not about somebody you have worked with or have not worked with, but who has influenced you in the most way?
Probably not so much people you would know, like famous people. I think the biggest designers or the best designs I worked with are really people who are not famous at all, but they kind of provided the kind of a template for me for how I view design leadership, but also in terms of how to develop myself and how to have the right attitude in a sense for guiding and mentoring other designers. So there's probably not designs that you would ever know and have articles about, but these are kind of the biggest influences in terms of my daily work. People who I really look up to and also, you know, taught me kind of the skills needed, not only design skills, but also personal skills and social skills that are needed to guide young designers, so they can, do their best work. One example I would like to mention, a designer like Thomas Wege. You never heard of him, but he was a designer, a design director at Adidas for the longest period of time. He basically taught me everything that I needed to know for designing sneakers. Because when I came out of Delft, out of university, I never designed a shoe before I joined Adidas. So he basically taught me everything that needed to know. And he's also in a sense, his personality and way of working. I really looked at him as kind of a example to emulate, even in that sense.
Cool. And last but not least, and then I'll let you go because we're already over 50 minutes. If you could have any money in the world, and this is the car question, which car would you buy?
If it needs to be a production car, probably the Lancia Stratos. And I have a kind of a thing for small sports cars that are not too flashy, but still have their really own character. And I really just love the proportions of that car and, you know, with the big wheels and kind of a short, stocky frame. I'm a big fan of Bertone and Marcello Gandini, all his designs, that's my thing.
Lovely.
Yeah. But in addition, if it doesn't need, if it can be a concept car that I could buy, then I probably would go for something like the Saab Aero X.
Nice.
I really love that. You know, not only what it did in terms of just the car design itself, but the whole design language that it set up for Saab, which unfortunately never came to fruition, right? But it's really a great design. I think, believe by Anthony Lowe. That I really admire, and I still look at pictures recently, and I thought, you know, that car still looks modern in a sense. You know, it's great.
Great. Well then, Sonny, thank you very much for taking the time. for joining us on the podcast. And I do appreciate, you know, you being so open and discussing this all with us. And to our listeners, thank you very much for listening to this lovely conversation we just had. And you will hear back from us very soon with another episode and another interview. Thanks, Sonny.
Thank you.